Injured in a car accident? We cap attorney's fees at 30% of the first million. Any recovery above that is all yours. No recovery, no fees or costs. If another lawyer wants more, Lawyer Up 904. For accidents, injuries, and more, Lawyer Up 904. Jacksonville.
Into the Night with Whit Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Rivalry Week! It is here, whether you're ready for it or not. We actually have football, I believe, tonight, right? The MAC. And what have you, we've had a lot of Tuesday night football as of late, Wednesday night football as of late. Then, of course, beginning on Thursday, we're going to get the Egg Bowl. Yeah, right now, Ball State up early. My goodness, 14-0 over Miami of Ohio. We also have Bowling Green and Ohio getting after it tonight. So a couple of ball games right here on this Tuesday. The Egg Bowl on Thursday, and that'll be intriguing with all the Lane Kiffin stuff. Boy, Lane really is a child. I admire him, but he's unlike, honestly, I can't even think of anyone remotely. He's like the Dennis Rodman of coaches. I mean, seriously, give me a comparison as we get things going right here on a Tuesday night. My name is Rick Ballew alongside Dylan Denmark. We do it late on Tuesday because of the outstanding ladies of Helmets and Heels. My regular show is 6 to 8. That'll be the case tomorrow night. We will be off celebrating Thanksgiving Thursday and Friday. So, again, if this is my last chance speaking with you, a safe one, hopefully with family and friends for you and yours. But seriously, give me someone that is equal to Lane Kiffin. I mean, I'm thinking classy Freddie Blassie. I'm thinking Captain Lou Albano. I'm thinking the Grand Wizard. He, and if you look at his resume, it's backwards. I mean, it's unbelievable to look at some of the stops this man has had earlier in his career. Remember right here in Jacksonville where Lane Kiffin was the head coach of the Oakland Raiders? Jacksonville blew him out. Warren Sapp completely lost his mind. And Kiffin tried to get to him, and Sapp looked at him like, you know, don't get anywhere near me. And, of course, the Raiders, Tennessee, USC. He's been able to go back and, you know, reinvigorate his career. Obviously, he worked down the road in the Deep South and went under Nick Saban, and they got into it at times. And all of a sudden, he's made Mississippi very respectable within the most difficult division in all of college football. And, you know, reportedly, he's on his way to the Plains. And I look at that and I'm like, all right, he's got a chance there. Okay. In my world, there's legitimately only 8 to 10 to 12 teams who are ever going to win a college football national title. All right. That's just the way the game is. So for every time you hear that Oregon's a player or Virginia Tech's a player or Mississippi's a player, this year's TCU is that, we know right now, TCU's not winning a national title. We know it, right? I mean, come on. Who's going to bet on it? Tim Brando every week would come on here and brag about the Horny Frogs, and I appreciate his love. I appreciate his way that he can brag about college football, promote college football. I kind of look at it and say, you know what? That's a nice club, but they're going to get slaughtered against the speed of the South. I don't care who it is, particularly if it's Georgia. They're just not going to be able to hold up. But that's college football. There's only a few destinations where you can win. I think in this state, you can make a case that either one of the big three can win. It's got to be a perfect mix of a coach, great assistants, phenomenal recruiting. And I hate to say it, but nowadays, everything that goes on with the NIL and with the transfer portal, can you put together something that is so special where you can become more than relevant again? You can actually become someone or a team for at least a small period of time that can make a run at a national title. Auburn has proven that. I mean, they honestly have. We saw him with Gus Malzahn going back 8 years ago trying to win a natty. We saw him go undefeated with Gene Chizik. There have been some good coaches. There have been some unbelievable runs for Auburn. You're never going to win a national title at Mississippi. The good thing about being there, not as much pressure. You know, the expectations, they're 8-3. You win the Egg Bowl, you're 9-3. You know, you go to a promising bowl and win, you have a chance to be 10-3. Again, a lot of people think that Lane Kiffin is going to get up and leave on Friday, but, man, he called out a member of the press who said that he was going to Auburn and then kind of redid everything and said that that particular TV analyst is on his way out. And it's comical and it's brilliant, but you also just got clobbered, right? I mean, Mississippi just really got embarrassed. They lost 42-27, and it was uglier than that if you actually did watch the game. And yes, they laid it all on the line the week prior when they lost by 6 points to Alabama. And another reason, a classic game, and again, a reason why Lane Kiffin knows he'll never win a national title in Mississippi. Just look at the officials during that particular game. As far as the late hits and the no calls, the situation there between Bama and Mississippi. So they've lost three of their last four. They lost at LSU. They were able to get by Texas A&M on the road. You know, it's one thing to have some fun and do whatever it is that you want to do. On the flip side, when you've lost three of four, including getting blown out by an Arkansas team, do you want your head coach doing these type of things? I certainly would not. And to see what he did begs the question, why would you do that if you're going to leave? I mean, after doing what he did on Twitter, don't you have to stay in Oxford now? I mean, don't you look like a Nick Saban? Don't you look like a Dennis Erickson back at Miami? Don't you look like Jimbo Fisher, who, you know, seemed to get into this year after year after year when he was at Florida State? Someone got the scoop. Someone reported it. And if he ends up going to Auburn, this gentleman is correct. And for Lane Kiffin to go over to Port the way that he did, if he now leaves, why would he do something like that? Is he trying to take a little bit of pressure off his players before the game on Thursday night? I don't know. There are reports out that the team has met and they have had conversations. Surprisingly, nothing's coming directly out of that locker room. But let's have some fun tonight. Give me someone that Lane Kiffin. Who, here we go. The 1110 says Blue Lane Kiffin is some sort of a weird mixture of Shooter McGavin, okay, Hunter Biden, and Dennis Rodman. Ooh, interesting combo. I was looking for more of just a one-on-one guy. You have one for us yet? You have one for us, Denmark? You need a little bit of time to think about this one.
I'm still thinking about it.
Is there any other coach who's done? I mean, Buddy Ryan? Bum Phillips, but they were kind of, you know, Bum was warm and fuzzy. Buddy was just an angry dude. There's no other way to say it. Lane's not an angry dude. Lane's got game, okay? There we go. Lane's got game, and he's brilliant. I mean, the guy's second career, you know he's going to be a broadcaster as soon as he gets done with his days as a coach, when he's ready to give it all up, whether it's in 2 years or whether it's in 20 years, you know he's going to be outstanding calling the game of college football, providing analysis in college football. But again, I'm really surprised by the timing of this particular situation that went down last night. Again, if you have anything, if you can make a comparison with Lane Kiffin, go ahead and get us on the text line, 641-1010, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures. All right, so it's rivalry week, and the latest installment of the college football playoff rankings are in. They did them tonight at 7. That in itself is a treat. After last week, you went into double overtime in that matchup between Michigan State and Kentucky in college basketball. I believe the third installment of the rankings didn't even come out until like 10:30 Eastern. Last Tuesday night. They did not make that mistake tonight. They went with their regularly scheduled program. and they announced it at 7 o'clock. As expected, no changes with the top four, and it is the way that it should be. Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and TCU. For those of you who do not know, and I understand this audience is outstanding when it comes to the world of college football, you do know that coming up on Saturday, you get Michigan at Ohio State. The Buckeyes actually favored by 7.5 points. Total is 56, but it's third-ranked Michigan in the horseshoe taking on second-ranked Ohio State. I think the most common question being thrown around now, can the loser of this game still get in as the fourth team? I asked Tim Brando that question last week. He says he doesn't think so. This continues to be a Southeastern Conference-dominated college football world. Case in point, look at the fifth team. It's LSU with a record of 9-2, right there over USC. Now, let me stop you right there. I watched, if you missed the USC-UCLA game on Saturday night, you truly miss one of the great college football games of the season. Now, there was zero defense, and you kind of knew it going in. I mean, the total in that game was 77. And it's that old adage, if it looks high, play it high. There's no way I'm going to lay down 77 points and play the over. Well, the final was 48-45. It's kind of like the under. Our good buddy Tim Brando, he had the under in the Iowa-Minnesota game. And before kickoff, the total for that matchup at 3:30 in Minnesota was a record low 31.5 points. 31.5. And guess what? They got 17 early points, but that was it. The final was 13-10, Iowa over Minnesota. So 23 points didn't come close to covering the over, which was, again, a record low 31.5. The exact opposite with USC-UCLA, where it was 77 points. The Trojans did win that game 48-45, and Caleb Williams was just outstanding. So if you look at that game, and a lot of folks watched it, all of a sudden, coming up on Saturday night, you have USC playing host to Notre Dame. That is going to get a ton of eyeballs because it is Notre Dame. And don't look now. All of a sudden, the Fighting Irish are really playing some turnaround football. I mean, they were beaten early, as we remember, by Ohio State. Then somehow they allowed Marshall to come in there and win. So the Fighting Irish began the season 0-2. It reminds me a little bit of the 89 Noles, who lost here on opening day in Jacksonville to Brett Favre in Southern Mississippi. And then a week later in Tallahassee, where if you remember in that point, during that time, that era, the only team who would win at the Doak was Miami, period. No one else won. And Clemson went in there with Terry Allen, and they really gutted Florida State on that particular night and got it done on the ground. Florida State went on to have a phenomenal team. I remember them beating Reggie Slack in Auburn. They beat Miami 24-10. They crushed Florida. They crushed LSU. It was a really good year for them, you know, after those first couple of losses. Well, same thing could be said here about the Fighting Irish. Wins against Cal at North Carolina, which before their blemish last week to Georgia Tech, North Carolina was probably one of the biggest surprises in the Deep South this year in college football. A nice win against BYU. Somehow they let Stanford go in there and win. I think you make the case that if you said one team would win at Notre Dame, Marshall, or Stanford, I honestly think most who really cover college football would have given Marshall a better chance to win than Stanford. It has been just an awful year out there on the farm. But then they pound UNLV. They win at Syracuse. They knock off Clemson. Okay, not only did they knock off Clemson, they really throttle the Tigers. They beat them 35-14, if you forget. Somehow they let Navy hang around, which was scary 2 weeks ago, 35-32. And then last week just dominated BC 44-0. So the point I'm trying to make here is all of a sudden for the University of Southern California, This is a monster game. If they can knock off Notre Dame on Saturday night, because Notre Dame, let's look at the rankings here. In the latest installment, let's see, Notre Dame comes in, come on, computer, work from here. Notre Dame comes in at 15, all right, right ahead of Florida State, still 8-3. One of the greatest rivalries in the history of college football. Okay, on a Saturday where all you're going to hear about is Ohio State and Michigan, and in some extent to Auburn, Alabama, probably more because of the coaching news than anything else. Obviously, Alabama's favored by 22 points in this year's Iron Bowl. This game here between Southern Cal and Notre Dame is going to be outstanding. And if USC can win that game, man, they're 11-1 going into the Pac-12 championship game. So you just looked at USC's schedule, and I gave it to you. Real quick before the break, let's look at LSU. They lost on opening day to Florida State. We saw Brian Kelly be in the exact same set of circumstances later in the year, the first weekend of November, when he went for, you know, when he went for it, went for two, and knocked off Alabama. You and I know that if he went for two against Florida State, LSU won that game. They did not. They took their chances with, they felt they were a better team. They could play him in the overtime period, and they would win out there as the momentum had completely flipped. Regrettable now. Certainly, they did lose 24-23. They can't have the one back, by the way, as well. They crushed Southern and Mississippi State and New Mexico. And then all of a sudden, you go to the heavies. And look at what LSU has done. They went into Auburn and won 21-17. They did lose at Tennessee. Tennessee spanked them. And that was at home, 40-13. They knocked off Florida here by 10, 45-35. They knocked off Mississippi, who at the time was ranked 7th in America, 45-20. They beat Bama in the game that we all saw, ranked 6th in America. They knocked off Arkansas 2 weeks ago and UAB a week ago. So the voters believe that the schedule that LSU has played is better than the schedule that Southern Cal has played. And you know what? We can go back and forth on that. We can argue it. But the bottom line right now, a very winnable game for LSU coming up on Saturday against the Texas A&M team that appears as though they have quit. And then they're going to get an opportunity. It's like they're going to be playing Georgia in Atlanta for the Southeastern Conference championship game. All right, when we do return, let's stay with some college football as we get things rolling. Let's take another look here at the rankings. I want to get into Florida State, Florida. I spoke to a great group today. The CHOP in, what do you call it over there for the Gators? I don't even know what it's called. But it was a great time. There was 150 diehard Seminoles and Gators in attendance. And the oozing of confidence coming out of my side is alarming. It's frankly scary to me. And, you know, I know what it's like. I know how I'm wired. I know how I'm a glass half empty guy when it comes to Florida State. And that's never going to change. That's just me. As I said earlier in the week, if you put something in my drink and I passed out till Saturday, and I woke up and you told me that Florida State won by a point over Florida and I would never be allowed to see the game, I'd take it. I'd sign up for it right now. Yet I got buddies of mine. I got people I associate with that are telling me they're going to win this game by 14 or 17 or 21. And I'm just like, whoa, hold on a little bit. So let's come back and talk about that as well. The latest installment of the college football playoff rankings, everything else that's happening, plus some NFL, which we'll get into in just a couple of moments as well. It's great to have you with us right now. It is a Tuesday edition of Into the Night.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Kind of nasty out there tonight. Grindy, greasy, gopher guts, if you will. It's just nasty, man. Spitting. No good, no good, no good.
Gloomy.
Who? gloomy?
Yeah, no sun.
Man. Tell you what, the weather really affects my disposition. And you can shrink me, you can psych me, psychiatric me, psychologist me, you can drug me, you can happy pill me. I'm a miserable guy when it's like this. The weather means everything to me. And, you know, can you imagine living in Seattle or Portland or someplace like that where this is the norm all the time? No way. I mean, we're blessed here in Duval. For the most part, we're going to get about 300 good days a year.
Yeah, like Thanksgiving is low 63, high 75.
Mm-hmm.
Not like that for most places here.
Mm-mm. The event I did today was the Chop and Chomp, and it was at the Jacksonville River Club, and it's overlooking the city up in the biggest building there, tallest building. It was a real cool event, 75 Noles, 75 Gators. And again, we're up, beautiful event, you know, looking over the city. It was just a terrible day out there as far as the weather. And I enjoyed it. It was a good conversation. You know, I don't get asked to do a lot of these type of things anymore. And I get the reason why. It's because I think I did it with Hayes Carline today. He represented the Florida Gators and I represented the Seminoles. But I think for the most part, when you have these type of groups and these type of meetings, you know, everything's supposed to be feel good, right? You know, everything's supposed to be rosy and, again, you know, warm and fuzzy. And I just can't do that. So I think I managed today to upset my Seminole brethren by perhaps not telling them exactly what they wanted, albeit I did say I think Florida State's going to win the game. I know I upset the Florida fans in attendance by telling them they should have lost that game to the University of South Florida because the officials gave them 8 or 9 calls.
That is true.
I also mentioned the 96 rematch as a tainted title, and I'll get over that when I take my last breath and fall into a wooden box. Stuff on Mike Norvell. Listen, it's simple for me. He has to win on Friday night. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. There's no excuse, okay? You have to win this game on Friday night, okay? You've lost 3 in a row. Florida right now is like a Kardashian, okay? They have no idea which way they're going. They are totally rattled. I think this is the last game for Anthony Richardson. I think the starting quarterback for Florida next year is going to be Sam Hartman, okay? And who knows what's going on, but I won't allow it. I won't accept it. If Mike Norvell does not win this game on Friday night, I've had it with him. Everything that he has built up, he loses in one game. Florida State is a better football team in every position. Okay, now you can make a case that Anthony Richardson is a better pure quarterback prospect and will have a much longer and more successful NFL career. I'm not going to argue with you right there, but we know under Billy Napier's offense, what Anthony Richardson is doing is very limited. It's like he just doesn't get the offense. He doesn't understand the offense. They can't install more for him. And, you know, you can even make the case last week. It almost felt like they were, you know, looking ahead for Florida State. They didn't even run Anthony Richardson in the first half. So that's where I'm at with it. And again, I, a lot of people don't want to hear that. And I'm not going to apologize for it, but I'm also not someone who is willing to change. I'll change only when they win games, okay? That's it. That's all I got for you. You win games and you get back to where you once were, then my comments will change and be far more positive. Right now, this is in doubt, and I'm a little surprised. You know, listen, I don't want to rip a fan base. I'll rip the team, or I'll rip either one of the teams, but I'm a little concerned that the fan base just believes that all they got to do is show up and they're going to win this game. Maybe they're right. Maybe they do. Maybe they absolutely crush them 45-3. I don't know. But we'll see.
How does Florida beat Florida State Friday?
Take a lot of chances. Throw the ball deep, even though you're limited at wide receiver. Go for it on fourth down. Work on special plays this week in practice that you haven't worked on all year and find the right time to use them. The other side would be, and let's be honest about it, knock Jordan Travis out of the game. You knock Jordan Travis out of the game, all of a sudden this becomes wide open. I said this to the group I spoke to today as well. I still can't figure out why Tate Rodemaker did not play more this past weekend. If something happens to Jordan Travis, you're not going to A.J. Duffy. You're not going to the walk-on. And I understand that they both deserved an opportunity to play, and I'm happy for them. But you gave Tate Rodemaker one series, and if something happens, and what happens if it happens in the first quarter? Tate Rodemaker is your quarterback. I can't believe Mike Norvell didn't give this man a couple of series this past Saturday against an inferior opponent in Louisiana. But listen, he's the coach, and he's going to do what he wants to do. I totally disagree with that. I hope it doesn't come into play. I hope that Travis stays healthy, and that's not even an issue. But that's the way that you win. You knock him out of the game. And outside of Louisville, he's been able to stay healthy so far this year. The 5118 says Rick Ballew, a.k.a. Is it the Donnie Downer? That's what he wrote. I thought it was Debbie Downer.
Yeah, Debbie Downer is the correct
term. He wrote Donnie Downer. Yeah, that's fine. I can handle that. The 8043 says Ballew, Lane Kiffin is the Kenny Powers of coaches. You know what? That might be the best one yet. Kenny Powers, hilarious. What was the name of that show again? Did you ever see it? Kenny Powers, the well-traveled minor league baseball player? It was...
Eastbound and Down?
Yeah, oh yeah. Great show. 1026 says, Ballew, I really would have liked to have seen Miami hire Lane Kiffin during the last head coaching cycle. Lane would dominate the ACC. The SEC West competition is tough. No argument here. It is the most difficult, you know, division in all of college football. You can make a case for the Big Ten East that they're really top heavy with Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. And look at what Maryland did last weekend. Michigan State's been struggling a little bit this year. I mean, they're only 3-5 in the Big Ten, 5-6 overall. They're going to have to win against Penn State in order to become bowl eligible. Indiana and Rutgers both clearly struggling. But I mean, look at the other side. Look at the West. Iowa and Purdue are both 5-3. Illinois and Minnesota and Wisconsin are all 4-4. I think, you know, traditionally we look at Nebraska and we look at Wisconsin and say those should be the two to represent in the Big Ten West, and that's not the case. I mean, Nebraska's 3-8. Wisconsin is 6-5. Wisconsin's played some better football as of late. But, no, that's a fair point. Lane Kiffin could have gone to Miami. I still think Mario – we do react awful. You know, our reaction time now is immediate. And I heard it today, you know, when I was talking at this event with Hayes. Billy Napier's not the guy. Billy Napier's not the guy. Well, you got to give Billy Napier an opportunity. Right, you just can't bring guys in and send them packing. And, you know, I'm still shocked by how things really ended with Dan Mullen. If you look at Florida and you go through Will Muschamp and you go through Jim McElwain and you get to Dan Mullen, I'm not entirely surprised as to what happened with Muschamp as a first-time head coach. McElwain was screwed from the moment that he lied. Okay, Mike Norvell lied. Marvin Wilson called them out, but Norvell was very apologetic about it. And somehow, somewhere, that kind of got covered up. And it ended up being more on Marvin Wilson, who didn't even get drafted. He went from a first-round automatic draft selection to a guy who's played two games in 2 years with the Philadelphia Eagles and was undrafted. He dodged a massive bullet, did Mike Norvell, during that. Don't get me wrong. All of these coaches lie. They all lie. If Lane Kiffin goes to Auburn on Friday, he's lying. So, you know, that's the men we look up to lie. Politicians, coaches, athletes. It's every day. I mean, it's bald face lies. And, you know, some of it you can mark up as gamesmanship. All right, and I'll come along with you there. I guess other reasoning you could say is it's perhaps by design. But that whole rule when daddy sat you down and said you're not allowed to, you know, lie, cheat, and steal, forget about it. I mean, every day in sports, we're talking about grown-ass men who are in the middle of a lie. But anyway, the ACC, absolutely it's a lot easier to win at than the Southeastern Conference, particularly there in the West. So again, we'll see what ends up happening when it's all said and done with Lane Kiffin. Baloo, this is 11-10. Big surprise, Notre Dame will get into the top four somehow and get smoked. Well, I'll agree with you. If they got into the top four, they would get smoked because they get smoked every year. But there's no way with three losses. That's not going to happen. There's no chance. You know, even an impressive victory over USC is going to move them up. They moved up three spots this week. That's the biggest gain of any team outside of UW that moved up four spots. The biggest gainers this week, Oregon 12-9, Kansas State 15-12, Washington, again, they moved up four spots, 17-13, and then Florida State and Notre Dame each moved up three spots. Notre Dame goes 18-15. Florida State goes 19-16. So those are the biggest moves forward. As far as the biggest drops, you had Tennessee drop five spots from 5-10. And let's see here. You had Mississippi go from 14-20. Another reason why I'd be so bent right now if I was an old Miss fan and Lane Kiffin's doing these, you know, doing these type of things, if he's going to turn around, get up, and leave. Yeah. Let's say this for the other side. I'm actually going to take breaks here on time, do all that good stuff. We come back. We got more on this. Getting some good things in here on Lane Kiffin. Okay. If you want to comment on that, you can. Also, anything on the college football playoff rankings is good. Give me your, because I'm out with you Thursday and Friday. I'm not. And none of us are here. We're celebrating Thanksgiving. That's one of the reasons why I always was disappointed about the timing of Florida State, Florida. I think we should be on the radio that week. It's arguably the biggest week that we have. But I'm going to be in Tampa. So the last thing I'm going to do is complain about it. But the point is before you know it, it's Thursday. So I got an hour tonight, an hour and a half tonight, and I got tomorrow night, then bam, that's it. Unless you got me on Twitter, Blue1010XL, I mean, conversations with you about this game are done. So it's an opportunity for you right now to weigh in on this. Am I wrong to believe that Florida State fans are way too cocky about this? Or do I just need to sit down, and I'm not going to shut up, but just sit down and relax. Tell me, coach me up. Make me better. Tell me. Because right now, and I will tell you this, what do they say, that men think about sex, is it every 7 seconds?
Yeah, 7-10. Sounds right.
It can't be that high. Is it really that high? I'm thinking about this Florida State Florida game. Like, it feels like at least once a minute. It's hitting me.
Just because it's too weird?
Well, just because it's here. You know, I think about this stuff anyway because it's my job. It's my livelihood. But the anticipation of this one, that was the first thing I said at this group today. I said the hours are going to go by like minutes until this game on Friday night. That's my opinion. But anyway, that's the way I feel about it. All right, let me come back. We got much more to do. 641-1010, best way to join us. That is on the text line brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, on college football right now. Next hour, we're going to mix it up a little bit, get into some NFL talk, including the latest with Fred Taylor. Congratulations. He's announced as a semifinal. They went from 123 to 28. What's going to hurt Fred is this year's players, first players on the ballot. You know, I think three automatically get in. You can make a case for a fourth. But I think Joe Thomas, Dwight Freeney, and Darrell Revis are all going to the Hall of Fame. James Harrison, maybe. Could be as early as 2023. He may be asked to wait around a little bit. It is a very, very tough list. I still think Fred's 2 years away. I think Fred, I think it's 2024 or 2025. The only other running back on the list is Ricky Waters. And Fred Taylor was a better football player than Ricky Waters. Ricky Waters was a very good player. Dual threat, as you remember. Kind of like a Roger Craig, good out of the backfield when it came to catching football. So we'll get into that a little bit in our next hour. Also, coming out of Tallahassee today, some good news. All right, the health. Micah Pittman, that lower body injury, he really got blown up. I couldn't tell if it was a thigh or a knee, and he left after he took a hit. Yeah, reportedly, he was even returning punts today, so that's obviously good news. He's their main return man and also is a factor at wide receiver. Johnny Wilson only played a couple of snaps. He had a hand or wrist issue. But he practiced today. You know, it's really so many people want to break down the game, and I love breaking down these big games. And you know, Johnny Wilson is such a playmaker. The guy's caught 33 balls. Okay, 10 games, 33 balls. So he is absolutely your definition of a home run hitter. And Mike Norvell and Alex Atkins have better be diagramming ways to get this man the football coming up on Friday night. Let me pull it up real quick here. Johnny Wilson, 33 receptions, 649 yards. The man is averaging 19.7 yards a reception, 5 touchdowns. You know, I think Florida State's going to win. If they lose, I don't want to turn around and look and see that, you know, they threw the football 3 times to Johnny Wilson. No. He's a 6'7" wide receiver. Florida's got a decent secondary. Florida's corners, you know, they made some big plays. They continue to make some nice plays. The defense has improved. Yeah, okay, I saw what happened last week. But go back to that South Carolina game. And this is the opportunity for him really to take that next step forward. I hope they feature Johnny Wilson coming up on Friday night. Darius Washington, who's kind of been, you know, the ultimate patchwork offensive lineman for FSU. They're still down 3 starters from the beginning of the year. The offensive line has been solid. It hasn't been outstanding, but more importantly, it hasn't been really bad the way it has over the last 5, 6, 7 years. And they have improved. And this is a game. Let me see the numbers here. I was looking a little bit earlier. Florida State needs to run the football. Seriously. That's how you beat the Gators. Florida State, right now, this year, averages 217 yards a game on the ground. Florida allows 171.5 yards a game rushing. There's your recipe right there. Run the football right at the University of Florida. And if you're able to run the football against Florida, that is going to make Jordan Travis and his pass offense that much more effective. We'll see what ends up happening. Yes. 8735 says, Blue, look out for a UF running game with ETN. I said this today at the group. That's the biggest surprise this year
for me with the University of Florida, why he has not received more burn. And I remember in the month of September, you know, sitting here saying, why isn't ETN getting more carries on Saturday? And then right here in Jacksonville, why isn't ETN getting more carries on Sunday? And obviously we saw the spike. ETN now clearly the go-to back. But if you look at Montrell Johnson, and this is a two-headed monster. And if Florida runs Anthony Richardson, I mean, they really have three guys that you could count on to run the football. And if you look at their averages, it's scary. I mean, Richardson 6.6 per tote. Montel Johnson 5.8 every time he carries it. Travis Etienne 6.2 every time he carries it. But the problem is, again, what? Florida's played 10 games or 11?
11.
They played 11 games and he's got 93 carries. So 10 into 93 would be 9.3 a game. We're talking about what? 7.5 carries a game?
This is for who?
Trevor Etienne?
Yeah. Yep. Well, and what they do with Florida, they go drive by drive. So to start the season, it was Montrell Johnson. He would get a drive, then Etienne would get a drive. And I really don't care for that. I mean,
I don't like it either. Yeah, I think you play a hot hand.
Yes, exactly.
I remember, you know, Billy Sexton, and he's not doing well right now. And I hope he is able to respond, the longtime running backs coach. At Florida State. Florida State had that rotation with Leon Washington and, and Booker, the Booker kid from California, who was supposed to be like, you know, the greatest football player to ever play at Florida State. And I want to say Antone Smith was their third back. Well, Billy Sexton did the same thing with Lorenzo Booker and Leon Washington, and the game was at Clemson, and it was so obvious. I mean, the eye test. Leon Washington was a much, much better back on that particular evening. You know, you promise these kids to come to your school, you're going to get playing time. That's a tough situation, and I think you need a couple of backs that you can hang your hat on, but there are times where it can backfire. And I'm not talking down Montel Johnson Jr. He's been really good this year. He has. But to me, Trevor Etienne absolutely deserves to get the football more. All right, my screen is down. We want to take a call here? Is that what we want to do?
He dropped.
Oh, okay. And then we'll set him up for next hour. Why don't we do that? 641-1010 if you want to get on in. You can. 2966 Blue, is Sam Hartman really going to be a Gator? Well, I think a lot of things have to come into play here. Number one, Anthony Richardson has to announce that he's going pro. Number two, Sam Hartman has to get his grade back from the NFL and his projection as to where he's going to end up going. I mean, where is Sam Hartman going to go? Is he a top 8 quarterback? Is he a top 10 quarterback? Is he a guy? We know this. He's not returning to Wake Forest. He's gone. So I think it's one of two things. I think it's the NFL or I think it's the University of Florida. And if he goes there, he's got an opportunity to run this offense. Now, I don't see Sam Hartman going there if Anthony Richardson is going to return. The good news with Richardson will be this. Win or lose Friday for Florida, they're not going to an impressive bowl. So, in my opinion, if Anthony Richardson is going to go pro, he's not going to play in that bowl game. His agency's going to say, listen, this, and you may go to Tampa, the former Outback Bowl. I don't know where you're going to end up, but and this has become the new thing. If you're not in the college football playoff, guys opt out. And you know, as a matter of fact, his response here, Blue, NFL, no way. He's not an NFL quarterback. We can argue that back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. We really can. All it takes is for one general manager to say, I believe he can be my quarterback. I believe we can work with this man. I think he's got all the measurables. He's got a cannon arm. The dual threat and what he's able to do with his feet is impressive. Unfortunately, the really two things that hold him back. Number one is completion percentage, his accuracy. And number two, there are some questions as to whether or not he is going to be able to handle and run the complex NFL offense. There are many in Gainesville who believe that Billy Napier's offense is really limited this year because Anthony Richardson just doesn't understand it. I mean, one of the greatest examples I always used to give is, and this is coaching 101, okay? And, you know, Billy Napier's trying to adapt to what he can do with Anthony Richardson. Jimbo Fisher will tell you that he's got the best offense in America, okay? And that the players need to learn it and understand it. Well, you know as a fan that part of coaching, and Mike Caldwell is probably going through this right now defensively with the Jaguars. One of the greatest things that you can have as far as your makeup as a coach is understanding what the talent you have can do and what they cannot do. So you remember that NC State loss, Florida State, well, they have 13-0, 16-0, whatever it was years ago, Thursday night game. Jimbo's so arrogant that he made E.J. Manuel do things that he just couldn't do. And E.J. was limited in his understanding of Jimbo Fisher's offense. Okay, remember when Christian Ponder went down? He had the broken arm. I was at that game in Atlanta. They knocked off South Carolina. That's when Greg Reed blew up. Who was the Marcus Lattimore, the great running back for South Carolina? And Manuel had to come in. Well, you know, EJ ended up being the first round pick, but when it came down to it, when it came to the learning and understanding, and by the way, it just doesn't mean that he's not a smart guy. He is a smart guy. I happen to love E.J. Manuel. First of all, he's an ambassador for Florida State. He does a great job in the Atlantic Coast Conference Network, and I see him at least once a year when I go to Charlotte. But in-game, when the play clock is running and a play is being called, he was limited in what he could do. Jameis Winston, say whatever you want about Jameis Winston. He knew everything. He knew everything about Jim. He drove Jimbo crazy because even though he knew everything, you know, at times he'd throw in the double coverage or triple coverage or whatever it was. That was just Jameis being Jameis. But Jameis got it. So back to what I'm talking about here now with Anthony Richardson in Florida. They're limited with what they can do. Can an NFL team grab this guy and teach him the offense and have this man believe that and run it now that it's his full-time job? I think you're going to get a lot of that when we start really diving into draft evaluation. So, I haven't heard from one person. I haven't heard from one who believes he's returning. How about you? You're a Gator. Have you heard that he's returning to Florida?
About 3 weeks ago, I think that the buzz was he was going to stay. I haven't heard that buzz last couple of weeks.
He was never really embraced by the brethren.
No.
I mean, there was all those transfer deals, and he's from there, and, you know, we found out he's getting paid north of $1 million.
Yes.
If you can give him $2 million and ask him to come back, I mean, boy, it'd be tough to leave. But, you know, my guess right now is that he ends up going into the NFL draft, and he could end up being the third quarterback selected. He's also ripe for a free fall and could end up falling if he doesn't test well. And, you know, that's the beauty of it. We'll see. All right, let's get ready for our second hour. 641-1010, Dylan Denmark is here. My name is Rick Ballew. This is Into the Night.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, I'm just peeking ahead here at the week that follows rivalry week. Yeah, it's kind of disappointing. I mean, it is college football for a lot of teams done this weekend. I mean, the season flew by. Very unpredictable year. If there was ever a season that you can make a case that there would be major upsets. Let's just say we had a 16-teamer and first-round games are on campus. I think based on what we've seen this year, especially the last couple of weeks, you're going to get upsets. There are college football fans, there are college football members of the media who forever have said, well, you know, teams that are 9, 10, and into the teens can't knock off the top teams in America. And in a lot of years, that's accurate. I don't think that's the case this year. Georgia's won. They'd play host to Florida State at 16. Okay? Obviously, I think Georgia is a better team and would beat them. But it's still a really good game. Number 2, Ohio State. Number 15, Notre Dame. Well, that's a rematch. Okay? Again, that would be in Columbus. Michigan 3, Utah 14. Boy, Utah, Cameron Rising. He made a lot of mistakes on Saturday night. You know, it was a great win for Florida. Utah's kind of gone back and forth this year. I had them over Oregon this past Saturday, and a lot of self-inflicted wounds in that loss. Number 4, TCU. Number 13, Washington. Number 5, LSU. Number 12, Kansas State. Okay, including myself, a lot of people around here don't know anything about Kansas State. They're one of those teams, who knows? Could they pull off the upset? How about this one? How about Penn State at 11 going into Los Angeles to take on number 6 USC? What an unbelievable first-round college football playoff game. Number 10 Tennessee going into number 7 Alabama. Okay? Say what you want about that. We know what happened the first time. We also know what happened to Tennessee last week to South Carolina. And obviously these games are all going to switch up because we still have another week of football. And then you would have number 9 Oregon going into number 8 Clemson. I mean, and that's wishful thinking because that's 16. We know what it's going to be. It's going to be 12 top 4 conference champions, top 4 highest ranked conference champions are going to get byes. If that was the case right now, it would be Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan would get leaped because they're in at large. So it would then be TCU at 3. LSU would get leaped at 5 because of Georgia, and then you would have USC coming in at number 6. So your first round byes would be Georgia, Ohio State, TCU, and USC. We don't know who, you know, Friday night, we're going to have, a week from Friday, we're going to have the Pac-12. And they haven't announced the teams. I was under the impression all along that USC is a shoo-in for that game, but they haven't announced it. They have announced TCU. They'll play Saturday at noon, and we'll find out officially who their opponent is going to be. The two games that we know, Georgia and LSU will play at 4 o'clock on Saturday in Atlanta. And then at 8 o'clock that night in Charlotte, it's going to be North Carolina and Clemson. All right, the Big Ten, obviously the winner of Michigan, Ohio State. And, I mean, they're going to be an enormous favorite in this game. It's depending on what happens this weekend. It's looks like it's either going to be Iowa or Purdue representing the West in the Big Ten. All right, final thoughts on the rankings. Really nothing here that shocks me, okay? I mean, again, we can go back and forth and argue who should be number 5, LSU and USC. But at this particular time, I don't know if it matters, and let me tell you why. LSU has Texas A&M, who they have to beat, right? If they beat Georgia, they're in. LSU would be 10-2. They'd be 11-2, and they would knock off Georgia. And, you know, I think Georgia is the only team in college football with enough street cred that regardless of the fact that if they were to lose in Atlanta, as long as they're not blown out, they still have a chance to sneak in as the fourth at large team. Now, you need a couple of things to happen. You need probably TCU to lose. You probably would need USC to lose. The flip side, and this is a question that has really picked up a lot of steam now the last week, and I asked Tim Brando about it last Thursday night. What if this Michigan-Ohio State game literally is a field goal difference? I mean, the Buckeyes are favored by 7.5. What if Michigan wins that game, you know, 23-21? Do the Buckeyes have enough? Do they have enough clout right now with this committee that even though they're not playing in a Big Ten championship game, are they still able to sneak in? Are you going to take a one-loss Ohio State team over a one-loss Clemson team? I can tell you they're going to take them over a one-loss TCU team. There's no doubt about that. All right? So that's where we are at this particular time. Some other notables, if you haven't heard, again, top four remain the same. Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, TCU, LSU 5, USC 6, Bama, Clemson, Oregon, Tennessee rounds out the top 10. Penn State, Kansas State, UW, Utah, Notre Dame is 11 through 15. Florida State, North Carolina, UCLA, Tulane, Mississippi is 16 through 20, and 21 through 25, Oregon State, Central Florida, Texas, Cincinnati, and Louisville. So that is the very latest as far as your rankings. And again, we're going to get a ton of movement coming up this weekend. I mean, I don't know what to make of Mississippi. If you're betting on that game, all the power to you. I have no idea what to expect out of this Mississippi team. You know something's going to leak during the game. This kind of got like the Les Miles, middle of the game. Something crazy is going to happen. And that's what the SEC is all about. So, I mean, this game can't get here fast enough. It's less than 48 hours away when Mississippi State plays Mississippi in the Egg Bowl. Right now, Mississippi favored by 2 at home. Again, I wouldn't touch that with anyone's money. Some games this weekend that are very intriguing for me. How about South Carolina, Clemson? How do you handicap that game? South Carolina looked like the worst team. Florida made the Gamecocks look like the worst team in the SEC 2 Saturdays ago. This past week, South Carolina looked like the best team in the SEC. It's a rivalry game. Clemson's won 40 in a row at home. South Carolina, huge favorite, 14.5 points. Auburn, Alabama, I think it's a mess. I really do. I think Bama wins that game like 48-14. 22's the number, and it's going to cover. Unless, you know, Cadillac Williams can get him fired up enough. I just, you know, it. Do the players play hard in a lame duck situation? I don't know what to make of today's college kids. Do they want to stay there with the NIL? Are they going to hit the transfer portal? The tape doesn't lie. If this was an NFL game and it was week 18, game 17, we wouldn't be having this conversation because guys in the NFL are going to play their hearts out because they know that the money's not guaranteed and they're playing for a spot either, you know, with the team they're at or another team. I don't know if that registers with college football kids. You know, they're just not mature enough yet. Could hurt them. You know, Oregon State is going to be really interesting. Oregon's only favored by 3. Don't dismiss Oregon State here, particularly in Corvallis. That game's kind of buried at 3:30. I don't think a lot of eyeballs around here will be on it. But as of I've have said now for decades, my second favorite division, excuse me, conference, behind only the SEC, I love the Pac-12. And late Saturday night is a perfect example of why I love the Pac-12. That USC-UCLA game and that Oregon-Utah game were two spectacular ones. Iowa State, 10-point dog at TCU. TCU just keeps winning, right? I talked about a little bit earlier, Michigan State, Penn State. Penn State favored by 18. Michigan State needs to win that game in order to go to a bowl. I think a lot of you around here will be keyed in. It's a great Saturday night. Okay, LSU at Texas A&M to me is one that I'm incredibly excited about. Of course, most of my attention is going to be at Notre Dame at USC. I'll have that one on with volume. But LSU, Texas A&M, I'm certainly going to pay attention to. I also want to watch Pittsburgh at Miami. Even though it doesn't really figure into anything, I still want to watch that game. And then late night's a pretty interesting one. Washington and Washington State, the Apple Cup. That'll be late night, Pac-12, after dark. That gets underway at 10:30 our time. UW favored by 2 in that matchup. All right, let me come back. Let's switch it up a little bit and get to the Jags. I do have a ton here, though. 2389, Ballou, Rick, that's the best running game I've seen from Florida State since Dalvin Cook, Cam Akers. I'm going to love watching them destroy the orange and blue. Go Noles. Well, Dalvin Cook was so good. I mean, he still is. Cam Akers had no line. This is a better line. This is a better offensive line than they have had. And again, they got three backs they can go to, but obviously I want Trey Burns to get most of the carries coming up on Friday night. All right, I'll see if I can switch in a couple more of these by the end of the program, but I do want to turn things around here and get to the NFL. Let's talk about the latest installment of the semifinals. Again, Fred Taylor's on the list. That's great news. We'll come back, talk about Freddie T right here on Into the Night.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, very intriguing trend sent to us from the 8386. Says Ballew, also a weird stat here. Every team the Carolina Panthers have faced this season have lost against the spread in the following game. Does this mean the Jags beat the Ravens?
I saw that on Twitter the other day.
It's a great number. It's a great trend. Going against Baltimore, I think the Ravens are a better team. I think the Ravens are arguably third best team in the East or the AFC. If I was a betting man right now, I think I've moved Kansas City ahead of Buffalo. And, yeah, I would say Baltimore 3. And I get the latest installment of the playoff, the way the standings sit today with 7 weeks to go. It would actually be Miami repping the division, and Buffalo is a wild card. And, again, this year only one bye in the AFC and NFC. Let me take a quick peek here before I get to Fred Taylor. I've been doing a lot of reading on Baltimore, but I'm not aware of how many – road games they've played in the month of November. All right, let's see. They had 2 in a row at Tampa and at New Orleans. They won close games. I mean, one thing you look at here with Baltimore, much like Jacksonville loses a lot of close games, and they've had a lot of fourth quarter leads, Baltimore finds way to win close games, okay? Look at the end of October. They had 2 games in 4 days. They played Sunday, then Thursday. They beat Cleveland 23-20, and then they beat Tampa Bay in Tampa Bay 27-22. They went on the road for a second consecutive weekend and knocked off New Orleans 27-13. Then they had a bye, and then they were basically, I didn't watch the game, and I usually look at the next opponent as far as their previous game, and I go back and look at it. I may do it tomorrow before tomorrow's show. We'll see. But my understanding is that Baltimore really kind of slept through this game. And they turned it on late to Carolina, by the way, and is going to go back to Sam Darnold as the quarterback. But they won 13-3. So, a home date before a road date is really favors Baltimore here. If this was consecutive road games, I think I would give Jacksonville a better shot. Now, Jacksonville's coming off the bye. One of the positives this year for Jacksonville is that they're scoring in the first half. They're able to come on out and do some good things where, the last couple of years around here, they just couldn't do anything early, especially in the first quarter. This year, they have turned that completely around. All right, Fred Taylor, it was announced today. The semifinals for the Hall of Fame, it goes from 123 players to 28. Fred Taylor, I still think he's a year or two away. And the reason for that is it's a really, really good list. It is. And how are you going to come up with five on this list? Let me start by saying there were two guys that I thought would get in a year ago who didn't, who I'm convinced will get in this year. Number one is Devin Hester, the return man. Okay, there was a lot of pub for him last season. I'm not sure how I feel about fringe players like that. I mean, we saw what Cordell Patterson did over the weekend in Atlanta. But still, he's getting a lot of play from the voters. I got to believe he gets in this year. The other real surprise for me a season ago was DeMarcus Ware. I thought that he would get into the Hall of Fame last season. I think those are two that are getting in. And I could basically just stop right there and add three new guys. Okay, Joe Thomas was arguably the best tackle of his era. I think he's in, Big Joe. He was a six-time first-team All-Pro. Okay? A two-time second-team All-Pro. He did that in 11 years. Dale Revis, in that great era, and you know, just him against Moss, and I know he came over to New England as well, and also did some, you know, good things in Tampa Bay for the brief period of time he was there. He was one of the best corners in the NFL. If I think of great corners of that era, he's right there for me, you know, with the Champ Bailey. Who else was a great corner in that era in the NFL? I mean, you can bring up, I guess he's retired now and he's working, Richard Sherman, right? You can bring up one of the Barbers. Barber's on the list. To me, it's not even close. Listen, I have a lot of respect for Barber. But to me, Darrell Revis was a better football player. Let me see. Where's Barber's got to be on this list, right? Well, you have Eric Allen on the list. You have Albert Lewis on the list. So there's two corners right there. Rondé Barber is back on this list.
What, Charles Woodson's on the list too, isn't he?
Charles is in, I believe. He's got to be in. Is he being out of the game for more than 5 years? Darren Woodson's on.
Darren Woodson.
As a safety. Yeah, Charles has got to be in already. So I think that that's what happens there is you're going to see these newcomers get in, and you can make a case, I believe, for four newcomers. Okay, I don't have a vote. If I voted, and all right, well, so despite what I just said, I wouldn't vote Devin Hester in. And it's not because of Miami. I mean, come on, give me a little bit of credit. I'm just trying to be honest with you here. Okay, by the way, the last time I checked, Fred Taylor's a Gator. Okay, to me, he was a fringe player. I don't have a problem if he gets in. I wouldn't put him in this year. I would absolutely put Darrell Revis in. I would absolutely put DeMarcus Ware in. I would put Joe Thomas in. That's three. And after that, it gets kind of confusing for me. Patrick Willis was such a good linebacker in San Francisco. Is he the fourth guy that I am going to put in? It's time for a 1,000-yard receiver, or I should say 10,000-yard receiver, and a receiver with more than 1,000 receptions. I mean, look at this list. I would have to put one in this year. Steve Smith, who we see on TV. All right, Torrey Holt. His numbers are staggering. Let me pull up these numbers here. Actually, I wanted to say this for Fred Taylor. I'll just go through it real quick. But look at these wide receivers, okay? Steve Smith, Torrey Holt, Andre Johnson, Reggie Wayne, Anquan Boldin, Henry Ellard, certainly older. His last year was 1998. It's time for a wide. Hines Ward. So you got seven wide receivers out of the 23. You got to put a wide receiver in. And for Jimmy Smith fans, what you need right now, those seven guys I just mentioned, every year you need a wide receiver to get in. And you didn't have one a year ago outside of a, who was it? It was an older wide receiver. Was it, what's his name from the Oakland Raiders? Cliff Branch. Cliff Branch got in a year ago. But, you know, that's where you are when you look at wide receivers. Because when you look at Jimmy Smith and you look at all the guys in front of him, even though they played later than Jimmy Smith, these guys have ridiculous video-like numbers. And in my opinion, they can't be faulted for that because of the era that they're playing in. And some people try to do that. I can't. It's the game. If you want to lower the mound in baseball, if you want to bring in the fences in baseball, if you want to juice the ball and juice the player, and then they hit a ton of home runs, you can't victimize them for being part of that era. And that's why I think the steroid era is going to get fizzled out. We've already let a handful of people who have been brought to the table as far as steroid use. It's time to bring them all to the table, right? Why can you allow Pudge Rodriguez or Jeff Bagwell or guys like that, but then all of a sudden it's like, Barry Bonds? You kidding me? Roger Clemens? Come on. It makes no sense. It's stupid. It really is. It's the same thing here in football. If you're going from 14 games to 16 games, if you're going this exact deal here with Fred Taylor, Fred Taylor's going against Emmitt Smith, Walter Payton, Barry Sanders, Curtis Martin, Jerome, all right, Martin and Bettis, that's not the best example. But Emmitt, Walter, Barry Sanders, Jim Brown before him, Marcus Allen, Franco Harris, John Riggins, O.J. Simpson. That was when this league was a running league. These guys put up phenomenal numbers during 14-game seasons because they got the football 25 times a Sunday. Fred Taylor was part of when the league was going through a transition, and we saw quarterbacks who threw the football. And having a balanced attack was great. And his contemporaries are in. Curtis Martin is in. LaDainian Tomlinson is in. Jerome Bettis is in. Marshall Faulk is in. Edgerrin James is in. Fred Taylor's next. There's only two players ahead of Fred Taylor on the all-time rushing list who are not in the Hall of Fame. And that's Frank Gore and Adrian Peterson because they're not eligible yet. They both have 4 years remaining. Fred Taylor, 17th all-time in rushing yards, 11,695. Fred Taylor's average per carry to this day is outstanding. He averaged 4.6 yards a carry. Going to Boston and not playing well there for the Patriots probably hurts him a little bit more than helps him because that's a great market, and it was also a market where Tom Brady and Bill Belichick won six Super Bowls, and that was not the case in the 2009 and 2010 season or seasons for Fred Taylor. So that may hurt a little bit. Fred also picked up another 2,384 yards in the air and eight touchdowns. Okay, so they're not gaudy numbers like Edgerrin James or Thurman Thomas or, you know, a pass-catching back like that. The other thing for Fred Taylor a little bit is, you know, he scored 14 touchdowns as a rookie. And then he, you know, missed six games in year two, but scored six touchdowns in 10 games. His third season, which was one of his very best in the NFL, where he ran for 1,399 yards and had an average of 4.8 per, he had 12 touchdowns. So Fred Taylor had 26. Fred Taylor had 32 touchdowns in 2.5 seasons in Jacksonville. But then after that, it just kind of got away. I mean, he got hurt in 2001 and only played two games. You know, 30 rushes, 116 yards. That hurts. That's right in the prime of his career. And then he continuously just put up staggering numbers. I mean, look at what he did in 2002, 2003, 2004. 13-14, 15-72, and 12-24 per carry. My gosh, that's over 4,000 yards in 3 years with an average of 4.6, 4.6, and 4.7. That is incredible. He got hurt in 05, only played 11 games, so he missed 5 games, had 787 yards. You and I know that if he's healthy and he plays those 5 games, he's going over 1,000 yards, but he got hurt. Injuries hurt him. Responded in 06 and 07, 1,000 yards, 1146, and then 1202. And then the end was the end. Maurice Jones-Drew's here, and, you know, he plays 13 games, gets 143 carries. It was his worst average per as a Jaguar. You know, it had gone down to 3.9, considering the 2 years prior to that after the injury, his average was 5 and 5.4. So we got up against the injury and lost carries to MJD. And then again, he was moved off to New England. But, I mean, this guy deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. 11,695 yards, 66 touchdowns, an average of 4.6 a carry. He's next. His only competition right now is Ricky Waters, but he's the only other running back on this list of 23. But what really hurts Fred Taylor is that this year's list, I mean, there are so many great football players. Who are you going to – Fred's not going to get in because there's 5 others that you can come up with. That's probably the best way to say it. One of these receivers that I mentioned is getting in. I think Zach Thomas is going to end up getting in. I'm not a huge Zach Thomas guy. I'm not. But I think he's going to get in. I think Jared Allen is going to get in. Now, I'd put Allen in as probably the 4th pass rusher. If I had any say, I would go DeMarcus Ware, 1. I would go Dwight Freeney, 2. Probably James Harrison, 3. And then Jared Allen, 4. But I think voters have these guys ahead of Fred. Hate to say that, but I do. All right. We'll take a break. You have an opinion either way on the Hall of Fame? I know a lot of these players played before your time. Robert Mathis is on the list as another pass rush end as well. I put him number 5 on this list. Anyone stand out for you here, Dylan?
No, I mean, you pretty much covered it. I caught most of these dudes toward the tail end of their career.
Right.
Like, I remember Jared Allen toward the end of his career at Minnesota. Reggie Wayne. Pretty much anything in the NFL from 08 on, I remember.
You caught the Torrey Holt golden year here?
Negative. That would be a no.
Torrey Holt would be the second Jaguar to get it. He spent, what? I think he spent just one season here, 2009. But he's got to be in. I mean, how can you not put Torrey Holt into the Hall of Fame? The man earned it. Let me see this real quick before I head to this break. I know. Let's look at receiving yards lifetime. Torrey Holt is 17th, 13,382. Okay, look at this list of guys that are. Reggie Wayne is 10th all time, 14,345. Andre Johnson, 11th all time, 14,185. Anquan Boldin is 14th all-time, 13,779. Henry Ellard on the list, 13,777. And then you get to Torrey Holt, 13,382. All on this list. Hines Ward, 12,083. So, you know, year after year after year after year. Jimmy Smith, by the way, for those of you who forget, is 25th on this list, 12,287. I think Jimmy's got a chance, but you need these other guys to get in. So at least have one get in a year. It'd be nice to have maybe a season with two that would get in. I think realistically for Jimmy Smith, it's probably 7-8 years away. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald's going to get added to this list. Someday Julio Jones is going to get added to this list.
Is Calvin Johnson in Hall yet?
Yeah, he went in.
That's right.
Yep, he absolutely went in. So those two are going to get added. So I think for Jimmy, it's like probably 7 to 8 years away. I think for Fred, it's not this year, but I think 2024 and 2025. is a real good ahead of Frank Gore and ahead of Adrian Peterson. I think it's a real good opportunity. And you know what Fred needs? Fred needs a lot of pub. Fred needs some press. Fred needs people like what I'm doing right now to go out and start talking about him and promoting him. And I'm sure, you know, I don't spend a lot of time reading statistics the way that I just did, but I wanted to remind you of what this man did in an era where it clearly was small market, big market. I don't think you can really make that argument now because, you know, with cell phones and the accessibility and it, nothing is really small market, although I will be surprised if it affects a guy like Tyson Campbell, who I think should be a Pro Bowler. And I think if he doesn't get in, they're going to look at the Jaguars and say they won three games and they don't get as much nationally televised attention. So I'm contradicting myself a little bit. But during the Fred Taylor, Jimmy Smith years, that Imbeselli, that absolutely came into play. There's no doubt. That was a huge factor for why it took so long for Tony and why it's taking so long right now for Fred. And unfortunately, I think it's going to take him a couple more years. But I'm pulling for him. Absolutely pulling for Fred Taylor. All right, final thoughts coming up right here on this Tuesday night. You want to respond to anything I just said, 641-1010, best way to get us. That is on the text line.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
God, I love the world of wagering, even though I don't bet. But I saw this today, and it blew me away. Of course, with all of the anxiety and just flat-out grief right now with Zach Wilson in New York. Next quarterback to be benched, this is non-injury related. He's minus 175 to the dollar, meaning you'd have to lay down $175 in order to win back 100. Then it's Davis Mills, okay, plus 400. You lay down a hunch, you get back four. Marcus Mariota, plus 500. Lay down a dollar, you get back five. Andy Dalton, plus nine. Lay a buck, get nine. Trevor Lawrence, plus 1,200. Trevor Lawrence is fifth on this list. I'm like, really? I mean, honestly, this is non-injury related. There's zero chance.
What do they know?
Well, that's what's scary, okay? Yeah. That's what's scary. But I'm like, really? I mean, ahead of Kenny Pickett? And I know they have two other established quarterbacks, or I believe one is hurt in Pittsburgh. Kirk Cousins plus 3,300? I mean, Cousins had him 8-1. That was, wow. Talk about a pass rush. They had six sacks, did Dallas. But I was kind of like, you've got to be kidding me here. This makes absolutely no sense to me. You know, during the bye on Sunday, I was watching games, and I watched one of the worst football games I've ever seen. That was Patriots-Jets. And Quincy Williams was making a lot of good plays. And I said I was going to do this, but I, well, truth be told, I kind of got after it a little bit and had quite a few cold ones and probably too many shots on Sunday. And I forgot about it until just right now during the break. But I watched for New England. Daniel Aquale forced a double team where Matthew Judon had a couple of sacks. And I was like, damn, Aquale's the guy they just let go. So I'm like, all right, could I put together a list of Jaguar players who have either been cut or traded? And could you say that list could beat the current team? Well, this is off the top of my head. I got... Let's say we're in pass rush situation, okay? No, we'll just keep it as a normal defense. Dante Fowler, Calais Campbell, Donald Okwale, Yannick Ngakoue. Huh? That's your starting four. You want to take out Fowler and pass, you know, in run situations, you could plug in J.T. Faley. Bring Fowler in and pass downs, move Calais inside. I think you've seen that before. Linebackers, Quincy Williams, Miles Jack, Damian Wilson. Cornerbacks, Jalen Ramsey and C.J. Henderson. Safeties, Deshaun Gibson, Ronnie Harrison. How's that defense? It's off the top of my head. Offense, Minshew, your quarterback. James Robinson, your tailback. Your wide receivers, DJ Chark, Alan Lazard. You know, I was thinking about Alan Robinson, but I was like, well, Alan Robinson, that was a legitimate, he left as a free agent. The only one on this list who left as a free agent. Everyone else I mentioned was either cut or traded. I mean, so I'm not going to allow A-Rob with my own little crazy poll here. Mercedes Lewis, your tight end. Line is the only problem I had. I have four linemen. That might be an issue. I got Andrew Norwell. I got A.J. Cann as your guards. I've got tackles. Calvin Beechin is your starting right tackle for the Arizona Cardinals. Josh Wells, a backup tackle in Tampa. There very easily could be more tackles out there that I'm just not aware of. Again, I just barely did this. But so that's a list. And, you know, that's a pretty formidable list of some guys that, for the most part, were just let go. You know, and outside of the trades with Jalen and CJ and, you know, Unique, Calais, Minshew, there's been a lot of trades on here, too. James Robinson, a heck lot of a trade. I guess they let DJ Chark leave as well as a free agent, now that I think of it. So, anyway, just thought I'd point that out as we get ready to say goodbye. What do we got coming up tomorrow night, for crying out loud? Our final show of the week. You fired up for that, Dylan?
Thanksgiving Eve.
Going to be a lot of fun. I tell you what, I hope we can get the Boston Bruins Florida Panthers game on here tomorrow night. That puck drops at 7 o'clock. And the Bruins won last night. I want to personally congratulate Patty Bergeron with his 1,000th career point. Only three other members of the original six in Boston, the original six, one of the original six franchises, have ever done that. Phil Esposito, Johnny Busick, and Ray Bourque. Even the great Bobby Orr never had 1,000 points. Of course, his career came to an end way too soon because of knee surgery after knee surgery after knee surgery. Folks, have a great night. Hackers coming up right now. We got one more before the Thanksgiving holiday. That'll be on Wednesday from 6 until 8. For Dylan Denmark, my name is Rick Ballew. Have a great night.